Yabsley.
And let's welcome my final lovely guest of the day into the studio. Delighted to say I'm joined by Craig Rackstraw. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Steve.
Craig is MD of the Bath-based wireless tech company Icotech. That is correct, isn't it?
That is correct, yes.
Fabulous. And he's going to tell us about a fascinating project with replica ships who are circumnavigating Antarctica. But let's talk a bit about your background. You live in Wales, I know. You're a keen traveller when COVID isn't happening. You visited over 40 countries worldwide. What sort of places have you been to over the years, then?
Well, I've been all over the country, all over the globe, really. Been to places which you can't even go to anymore. You know, Syria, Mali.
Why did you go to those? Is that pure curiosity?
Pure curiosity. Often I was led by seeing something amazing in National Geographic magazine and said, right, I'm going to go there and see that, or seeing a David Attenborough programme. And, you know, that led me to go to Ethiopia, for example.
Gosh.
But I've travelled across China and Tibet and South America.
Have you had to rough it sometimes?
Very much so. You know, some countries are a lot rougher than others, as you can imagine. And, you know, those... With hindsight, those are often the best journeys that that we've had, really.
Yeah, what's the most magical place you've been to, personally, that really sticks out?
It's a tough one. I mean, I guess Nepal in particular is... I've done a couple of treks in Nepal, going up to Everest Base Camp and going around the Annapurna Circuit, which, you know, you spend several weeks up in amazing mountains, incredible night skies, and just really getting away from it all.
Yeah.
But then other places like going to Tibet and seeing the Potala Palace or to Machu Picchu. And, it's incredible.
And what about wildlife? Where have you seen the best wildlife?
I've been to South Africa quite a few times and seen lots of amazing wildlife down there. My wife is South African, or was South African. And, you know, I mentioned Ethiopia earlier. Went there specifically to see the Gelada monkeys, which were featured on a David Attenborough program. And, again, those monkeys are nuts, you know. They'll sit on the side of a cliff and, you know, thousands of feet drop below them and they're just chewing on a bit of grass, you know.
You've got a great passion, I know, for the natural environment. Where are you from originally? Your accent clearly isn't local.
Well, not Bristol local, no. I grew up near Peterborough, but then post-university moved down to Bristol, and I lived in Bristol for 15 years or so before ultimately ending up down in Wales.
Is there anywhere that you want to go on your travels going forward that you haven't yet got to?
Yeah, well, you know, I often discuss that with my wife. And, you know, we've had a bit of a hiatus while we've had children and, you know, things are less adventurous than they used to be. But, you know, we've got big plans to go travelling again.
Where do you want to go then?
I couldn't even tell you, Steve. There are so many great places and... You know, sadly, so many places are changing now where I may like to go, but...
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned China, which is a tricky country to go to, I should imagine, these days.
Yeah, well...
Rising tensions.
I went there a couple of times in the 90s and haven't been there since. I worked in Taiwan for 6 months as well, in the 90s as well. But
was that with semiconductors?
I had a spell in the lift industry.
And, oh, right.
I spent 6 months out in Taiwan.
I bet that was a bit up and down.
To bring up...
Sorry.
I haven't heard that one before.
how do you feel? I don't want to get political particularly, but how do you feel about the threat that Taiwan is under at the moment? Just hearing today that Nancy Pelosi, the American diplomat, a leading politician, China have said officially if she goes there with an escort, they'll shoot it down. Or, you know, it sounds pretty provocative.
They've said that through their media mouthpiece. It's hard to know really whether that's, you know, it's a clear threat, of course.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know whether that's been a directed threat or whether, you know, I think Chinese media often get ahead of themselves in the jingoism.
Just the sort of thing that could start World War III, though, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's terrifying, really.
Yeah. The issue is, of course, that Taiwan has exploded as a tech country and it makes these semiconductors. I think it dominates like 60% of the market or something like that. And they're so important to so many different things that over the last 30 years or so, the importance of Taiwan as a producer of these things has grown enormously, meaning that China, which perhaps wouldn't have bothered about it if it didn't produce those so much, is becoming increasingly interested in it once more, isn't it?
Especially as you know, trade is becoming more difficult with the US. There's, you know, I guess they run the risk of not being able to get specialist semiconductors from Taiwan in the future.
Yeah.
And they'd have their own industry for semiconductors, but it's not all-encompassing.
Well, let's hope everything calms down and we can be friends again. Now, you've had a career as an electronics engineer. Where did you go to college then? Where did you study your craft?
I went to Warwick University.
Uh-huh.
But I was lucky that when I was at school, they'd introduced a technology O-level at the time, GCSEs now, of course. And, you know, that O-level course was a combination of electronics and mechanics and structures and things. And that really got me into electronics and kind of diverted me off the science, wanting to be a chemist route that I'd originally had. Thank goodness, because I'd never have cut it as a chemist.
Well, you've had 30 years experience working on a range of different research, design and management roles with a variety of companies. I mean, before you founded your own company, what sort of things were you doing?
Well, after a spell in the lift industry, which was about 6 years, I then, you know, made a purposeful dive towards the wireless communications type of industries. And I worked with a couple of startup companies that grew to certain sizes, and both in product development and in sort of more of a research type of role, looking at new technology for future base stations and cellular networks. So cut my teeth in those companies, you know, as is fairly traditional, you know, some of them grew, got taken over, and got disappeared into the, you know, the size of some of these companies that buy them out. But, you know, cut my teeth there and learnt a lot about the wireless comms technology and the electronics industry.
Yeah, it must be interesting for you, someone who's got a passion in this, to see the way that the innovations have speeded up. I mean, it's happened throughout the whole electronics world. Mm. The way new things are coming on stream almost every month, which are improving the capacity or the ability of machines to work in a more efficient manner. I mean, you must scramble sometimes to keep up with innovations.
It's almost impossible to. I mean, you look at the trade mags and, you know, you look at the news and you see these new ideas and new inventions coming out. Some of them are real, some of them are, you know, imaginary. You know, there might be an exciting research paper comes out on a particular technology, but never makes it into a product. And sometimes, you know, suddenly a product just emerges from nowhere that you didn't see developing in the background. But you can't possibly keep on top of it all. And you know, in the consultancy environment that Icotec is, you know, we're very lucky in that because we get so many inquiries from such a diverse range of customers and businesses, that we do get quite a broad view into those different areas, and that's what keeps it exciting. And you know, less focused on one particular niche inside, you know, a sector.
I know this isn't your area at all, but I'd just be interested to hear your view as someone who knows the world, at least, much better than I do. What your view is on innovations in things like battery storage and solar panel and green energy. Do you think there's going to be a step change suddenly where it will all become a lot more affordable?
That's a very difficult question. There are millions of different approaches to battery development, and you know, I read about new ideas all the time that are really in the very early research phases.
There has to be a breakthrough, though, doesn't there? Because at the moment, there's this resistance to moving to a greener agenda because of things like storage.
Very much so. I think storage is a really key thing, and it doesn't have to always be about batteries. I mean, I think some of the more exciting solutions are almost mechanical in their creation. I mean, not just because, you know, a mechanical solution like pressurizing a gas or using a weight down a mine shaft or something to use as a storage of energy is, you know, it's far less invasive in terms of getting the materials to create those solutions than, say, making, you know, massive lithium-ion batteries, for example.
Yeah, there was a great innovation I saw earlier this year, which is basically when there was a lot of excess green energy, they just push huge stone slabs up a hillside, and it's on railway tracks, and it stores the energy, of course, at the top of the hill till you need it. And it's such a simple solution.
It's so simple, and you know, I think there's a lot of mileage in those type of approaches. You know, you mentioned China earlier. They, you know, they're a key supplier of, you know, a lot of the resources that you need, the raw, particularly the rare earth metal resources that go into a lot of electronics and you know, battery storage solutions as well. So anything that doesn't require those materials is going to be less harmful for the environment and less troublesome sort of globally, politically.
About 20 years ago, I interviewed a bloke who'd written a book called The Search for Free Energy. And it was about the way that the researchers globally are scrambling around trying to find a new way of creating energy that hasn't been discovered yet. And you know, this remains to this day. Do you think we might just chance upon a new technique for converting some raw material into energy that we haven't yet thought of?
I, I probably don't think we need to. I mean, one of our biggest promises really is one of the oldest ones, and that's fusion.
Yeah, but it's never been really successfully done, has it? I mean, there have been trials where they say they've got close, but they've not actually done it in a commercial
sense. It's been one of those ongoing things for decades now, where fusion energy has always been 20 years away.
But is it? Do you feel it's genuinely feasible then?
There's a real change now. You know, that projection of when real fusion energy will be, you know, coming online, you know, not in a production sense, but in terms of genuinely getting more out than you put in. That's almost there now.
Well, that would be brilliant, because that is the boundless energy, isn't it?
I mean, absolutely. That is, you know, it's the holy grail, really. And, you know, the inputs are you know variations of hydrogen, and the outputs are water.
And it would be great. For world peace if the technology was made, you know, free to use. You know, and it would settle a lot of countries down, wouldn't it, internationally? Let's talk about your company then, Icotech, founded in 2013 with the aim of delivering cutting edge technology focused on wireless design, underpinned by a philosophy of honest and open engagement with colleagues, customers, and suppliers. You started it. You were joined by Liam Wickens, and you've got a team there, including Joshua as well these days. For a lot of our listeners, we'll have to talk in very broad terms about what you actually do. You mentioned wireless a few times. That itself has developed as a technology enormously, hasn't it?
Enormously. And, you know, we do electronics across the board and software as well. But we've picked on wireless as a particular niche, not least because founding members, myself and Liam in particular, have a strong background in wireless communications, particularly around the cellular base station type of stuff, so the stuff your mobile phone talks to. And, you know, when I started off in the industry, you know, the only technology that's around for mobile phones was 2G. And, you know, we're now receiving 5G, and people are still talking about 6G now and beyond that. And it's just a constant march of technology, as it is across all of, you know, the technologies we've already spoken about.
Do you think young people are spoiled? I mean, because, you know, teenagers coming on stream now have instantly got the 5G, whereas, go back 30 years when I used to fiddle around with computers, you were waiting for the modem to download. You'd be looking at the screen for half an hour before anything happened.
Absolutely. And I think people are spoiled now with the ability of wireless connectivity, you know, whether it's short-range Bluetooth connections between your mouse and your computer, or whether it's Wi-Fi, or whether it's longer-range cellular communication. They've all merged into one kind of homogeneous type of connection from your device, whatever that might be, to everything else in the world. And, you know, I still have conversations with my children trying to explain the difference between Wi-Fi and a cellular connection, and how Wi-Fi is not the internet, you know. You know, the internet's out there. Your connection to it is via your Wi-Fi connection, but if the internet's gone down, you can still have your Wi-Fi, you know.
Well, since you started the company, you worked on a range of different projects, and we've already mentioned your love of the natural world and nature, and you've worked on conservation projects, wildlife monitoring, anti-poaching sectors, that work with sea turtles, plastic pollution, all these sort of things that are very close to your heart.
Absolutely, and you know, when you're working with, in your job, and your job is technology, and then you get the ability to apply it to things like conservation, studying animals and monitoring their behaviours, then, you know, that's solid gold.
What sort of poaching were you looking at when you were involved?
It was part of a bigger programme where the system itself, which we didn't design the whole system, but we input into it, was, you know, it was a combination of things like camera traps and audio type of...
What animals are we talking about?
Anything. It was applicable to anything.
I see.
But part of the part of anti-poaching relies on being able to sense, for example, heavy machinery or weapons. So using magnetometers to sense someone walking by with a gun. Very sensitive magnetometers allows you to, you know, maybe alert people that there's a poacher in the area. Or if you're monitoring illegal logging, for example, big truck goes by, you can maybe sense that either through the fact that it's a big lump of metal or by the sound it makes or the vibrations. Lots of different opportunities for measuring things by putting sensors into the environment across the board. And there can be literally anything from audio to magnetic to to visually, you know, camera trap is you know, a fantastic resource because you can get a picture of your scene. But then when you get the data, and this is kind of where we tend to come in, is how do you get the data from that source to somewhere useful? And how do you aggregate the data? And that means transmitting it, usually wirelessly, because there's no infrastructure. And that's where our expertise is in the wireless technology segment, is bringing it all together, making that connection from the sensors to across the world somehow to a computer somewhere. And it could be the other side of the world, it could be in someone's shed, it could be in the United Nations, you know, wherever that data goes, it gets analysed, you know, it's live, it's, you know, it's all aggregated and it can be processed.
Well, the project you're working on currently, at least one of them, is a lighter one in effect, and it's a playful thing. It's called Erebus, and it's about an Antarctic science voyage, and you're supporting two young Scottish brothers called Harry and Ollie Ferguson. They're only 10 and 12, I think. And you were contacted, I think, initially by their dad, who's called
Mac,
yes, up in Aberdeenshire. Mm. And he wanted some advice because they were planning this mission. They already had a bit of a background in doing different projects. What did he come to you with then?
Yeah, well, it was amazing. I mean, I had a call just over a year ago from Mac, and he told me this great story because in the previous 6 or so years, since about 2014, his children, and with his help, of course, have been working their way through a list of 500 adventures, things to do before they're 18, or at least before they stop talking to their parents.
500 is very ambitious.
Very ambitious. And I think they're already in the up to 370 or something. They're really cracking through them. And they're all kinds of things, you know, from the fairly banal to the quite adventurous. And it's things like, you know, sleep in a hammock or go caving, pan for gold, send a Lego man into space with a, you know, with a GoPro camera on a balloon, and they've done all these things. And there's a great backstory of all of the different adventures they've done and the ones that they want to do. And one of those adventures was it was a message in a bottle. So the idea was, you know, put a message in a bottle, throw it in the sea, and see if anyone picks it up. But they wanted to do something a bit different, and they had a Playmobil plastic ship, and they decided to send that instead of a bottle with a message on it. So they packed it with polystyrene to make it float, and they put it in the North Sea. And it floated off to Denmark, where it was picked up, and it was found, and then it was thrown back in the sea, and then it ended up in Sweden. It was found again, it was put back in the sea. And then it was picked up by a Norwegian research vessel in the North Sea. And to cut a long story short, they took it down to the Atlantic with permission of Mac and the boys, of course, and they set it into the Southern Antarctic Current that carried the boat all the way across to the Caribbean. And I know this because when they took it down there, they put a GPS tracker on it, so it made it all the way across the Atlantic, and broke a world record, which was a recorded world record in the Guinness Book of Records. And then the tracker died, and they lost the boat. And so a local family in the Caribbean decided to recreate that, and using another Playmobil ship and with advice from Mac and Ollie and Harry, they created another second Playmobil ship, which they put in the ocean, and that came all the way back across the Atlantic again before it was eventually lost, possibly in a storm. But that almost doubled, or more than doubled, the world record. So now it's like a 15,000-kilometre toy ship world record.
And they're now doing this epic voyage with two replica ships, aren't they? Which, yeah, are really rather nicely designed. And your tracking devices are on board, or will be.
Exactly. Well, this is the nub of the story. So what could they do to beat that? So they, inspired by the recent finding of HMS Erebus and HMS Terror, which were taken by James Ross down to Antarctica back in the mid-19th century, they've literally carved 2-metre-long hulls out of ancient elm. And they fully rigged them. And they wanted a tracker to be able to track these boats in the Southern Ocean Currents, which goes for 20,000 kilometres around Antarctica. So Mac was asking us for advice on, you know, well, where can I get a tracker from? You guys do trackers, right? And we had a long conversation, and we said, well, let us design you a custom tracker, and let's make the whole journey more useful and more scientific, as the original Terra and Erebus journey was. And so we've added some climate sensors. So we're measuring ocean acidity using a pH sensor and ocean temperature. We've got a forward-facing camera on there as well to take a photograph once a month. And we're, as well as the location, we're sending all this information back via a satellite link from the boats.
So you've designed that technology which is going to be on board the boats, which can send it back wirelessly.
That's correct.
Fingers crossed it won't get damaged by a storm or an animal or a crash or something like that.
Yeah, we're expecting the worst. And, you know, the Southern Ocean is one of the most harshest environments on the planet.
When are they going to set sail?
Well, the two boats are in a crate right now in Scotland, and they're waiting. We were hoping that they were going to get flown down to the Falkland Islands, but we found out just this week that it's not possible to get them flown down due to flight availability. So, you know, short of, you know, someone from the RAF offering up a Hercules or something, we're going to have to ship them by sea, ironically. And we've got a plan to get them shipped on the 16th of August, which will get them to the Falklands by early October, at which point it'll take a week to get them set up, calibrated, ready for the voyage. And then they'll get taken out, hopefully on a fisheries patrol vessel, and dropped in the Southern Ocean Current, where we will then start to track them via a live map on our website, on the Icotec website.
And potentially, how far could they go then?
Potentially, we hope that they will at least do a lap of Antarctica, about 20,000 kilometres.
Wow.
We've got enough battery storage on there, and the way we've designed the trackers is such that we, in a best case scenario, we could hope for 6 to 7 years of runtime. If anything goes wrong, we've got fallback mechanisms which will result in them using up more battery power. But even then, our minimum expectation is about 3 years, you know, barring any proper calamity.
And as you mentioned, there are details on your website. If people look at icotec.com, which is spelled icotec.com, there's a very easy to find button you can press on, which will give all the details once it's underway.
That's right. There's an Erebus item at the top of the menu bar there, and not only can you immediately get taken to the live map, which will be live as soon as the voyage starts, but if you scroll down to the bottom, there's some links to how the ships were built by Ollie and Harry. You know, their journey from concept through to designing it to actually physically building it. And there's a section on the tracker that we've designed and the details of the elements that went into it, the challenges of the software, the way we have to pack the photographs, for example. It's very challenging because the satellite link doesn't carry much data, so we need to chop the picture up, send it opportunistically in times when the satellites are going over. So very challenging to get that simulated and to get it implemented.
Well, be very interesting to watch the progress of it. People need to look at your website, icotec.com, icotec.com. Look for the Erebus tab at the top of the screen and you can find out where it goes and how it pans out, and photographs hopefully will be featured there as well.
That's right.
Fabulous stuff. Finally, I also ask you, Craig, as a small company, Bath-based, I mean, how are you doing? It's not easy for companies these days. Are you flourishing or are you struggling?
We're flourishing of a fashion. You know, as a small business, it's always challenging, and you know, there are peaks and there are troughs in the business. But you know, touch wood, the last couple of years have been particularly good for us. We've got some amazing projects going on at the moment. Not only this has been a bit of a side project for us, a really good fun one, and one which will go on for many years, we hope. But we're also doing lots of work in cellular base station stuff for defence applications and things, which, you know, is great. It's interesting, and you know, it's keeping us going and keeping us, you know, fully occupied. So it's good.
Well, every success going forward. Thank you so much for coming in today, Craig.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Craig Rackstraw, who's the MD of the Bath-based wireless tech company, Icotec, spelled I-C-O-T-E-Q. And if you're interested in that project which they're involved with, those two young Scottish lads, Harry and Ollie Ferguson, with those two replica ships, which are hopefully going to travel all the way around Antarctica, go on the Icotec website, icotec.com, look for Erebus, which is the name of one of the ships that they have created, and you'll be able to follow the route as they travel around.